My World Results. While the My World survey is still new and will continue until 2015, the results so far show a number of interesting and possibly telling trends that are worth mentioning here. The survey data is available in real time at the website, where it's broken down into categories that include male, female, the age ranges identified as less than 34, 35 to 54, and over 55. As of this writing in the summer of 2013, there appears to be a high level of agreement for both men and women under 34 years of age regarding their top 7 priorities when they envision what a better, transformed world may look like. On a global basis, without question, the top listed priority is a good education. From the same age group, both men and women selected the next 6 categories in descending order of significance in their lives. They all want, 1, better health care. 2, an honest and responsive government. 3, better job opportunities. 4, access to clean water. 5, affordable and nutritious food. And 6, protection against crime and violence. While there is near unanimous agreement on the priorities that include these first 7 parameters, beyond this point, the ideas become mixed with no clear trends that are evident, at least at this time. For example, men tend to see the category of better transport and roads as the 8th level of priority for them. This is not surprising when we consider that it's the men who generally are using the roads more often to provide goods for themselves and their families. For women, the next level of priority becomes equality between men and women. This is also not surprising, as there is a near universal struggle in every nation of the world regarding women's rights. Not only are these issues with regard to economic equality, but also for protection from victimization and abuse, and especially during the vulnerable years of raising children. Also not surprising is what the survey shows in terms of priorities for the next age range, the 35 to 54-year group. It's at this age boundary that the better healthcare category does a flip-flop with a good education category as the 1 priority. It's no surprise, for the obvious reason that the age reflects a greater need and dependency on the healthcare system as age-related health conditions begin to show up in their lives. To be clear at this point, I'm not suggesting that the future portrayed by the UN's My World 2015, or the NIC's Global Trends, or Lester Brown's Plan B series, or any of the other books, projects, or ideas I've mentioned is the answer to a transformed world. Each of them is a microcosm of the world, precisely like the microcosm I see in my seminars and what we all see every day in our lives. There are many different ideas of what a better world looks like, probably as many as there are people in the world itself. I'm sharing them at this point to ground our view of the reality of so many different ideas and to lay the foundation of facts for where we go next. It's from this point that we'll have the information to bring in new possibilities, new turning points, with the potential to lead to new outcomes and perhaps very different worlds than those described in the reports. Cuba, 1990, an example of a real world turning point. While think tanks and visionary scholars speculate on how a future of broken economies, the loss of corporate agriculture, and the peak oil scenarios might play out, history gives us a real-world example that takes the guesswork right out of the equation. Following the collapse of the former Soviet Union in the 1990s, after the Cold War, Cuba became a prime candidate for the benefits of community resilience. What happened for Cuba in the early 90s is difficult to imagine. But because it did happen, and it happened in our lifetimes, it provides a living laboratory that shows us the power of a turning point of resilience in the real world. For a number of reasons, including the continuing U.S. trade embargo upon the island nation, during the Cold War years, Cuba's livelihood depended heavily upon the imports, exports, oil, and the support of the former Soviet Union. When the USSR disbanded, Cuba's imports fell dramatically. The post-Cold War economy was not only devastating for the people of Russia, it was even worse for Cuba because of its geographic and political isolation. Suddenly, Cuba lost 80% of its export and import markets. Seemingly overnight, the gross domestic product dropped by 34%. Its oil-fed system of transportation and agriculture screeched to a halt. For a period of time, it could take 3 hours to catch a bus, and food consumption was reduced to as little as one-fifth of what it was before everything changed. The nation's oil-fed power system could no longer produce electricity, and there were rolling blackouts that lasted for much of the day. Without electricity, the cities were dark, businesses closed, restaurants stopped serving food, and the Cuban economy went into a tailspin. During this time, the ripple effect of the sudden loss of oil, effectively an artificial post-peak oil scenario, became painfully clear for everyone. Cuba doesn't produce its own oil. It relies on imports. And when they stopped, there was no substitute fuel because the nation hadn't developed one. The conditions became dangerous. The agriculture that Cubans had relied upon was possible only because of the oil that had made it possible to grow, irrigate, and harvest a lot of food quickly. Without the oil, agriculture declined, and people needed food. The combination of the collapse of agriculture, the loss of imported oil, and no foreign markets created the perfect storm that is often referred to in Cuba today as the special period in time of peace, or simply, the special period. It was during this time that the Cuban people made the decision to adapt to the extremes that they faced. What happened next will sound like it's taken right from the highlights of this audiobook. I'm sharing it here as an example of and a testament to the power of local communities to create local solutions that work for them in a healthy and sustainable way. In cities throughout Cuba, including the capital of Havana, with a population of approximately 2.1 million people, the residents formed neighborhood communities. Now, I'm not suggesting that they went through all of the steps identified in this book, or that they followed a formal protocol of assigning responsibilities or a structure of authority. But what I am saying is that they recognized the need to come together as a community to address a problem that they all shared. At the time, the problem was one of survival that motivated them. The communities needed to eat, and this became the driving value of their community vision. One of the first things they did was to identify public lands that were not being used. As communities, they went in and cleaned up that land and began to plant inner-city gardens. It was during this time that Australian experts came to Cuba and demonstrated the value of permaculture farming under such conditions. Permaculture is a form of ecological design that models self-sustained gardens from natural ecosystems. Carmen Lopez, the director of one of the permaculture centers, described the effect of the Australians' teaching by saying, quote, "With this demonstration, neighbors began to see the possibilities of what they can do on their rooftops and even on their patios," end of quote. The gardens were successful. The communities began to produce enough food not only to feed themselves, but also people in other communities. Today, the gardens continue. They're now organic, and they've made the neighborhoods and communities they serve so economically sustainable that their presence has had an effect upon the policies of the government and the nation itself. Seeing the value in the resilient response of the people to the conditions they faced, the Cuban government has changed its official motto from socialism or death to a new motto that states, "A better world is possible." They've also taken the steps toward more bottom-up government by shifting decision-making down to the community level rather than enforcing policies that are made at a higher level from a location that is less in touch with local issues. In this way, government officials are encouraging greater community participation, and the people feel that they have a voice in their lives, their communities, and even their future. The success of Cuba's response is not limited to agriculture alone. The same principles of community resilience and local solutions that kept people alive during the special time have now been applied to other areas of Cuban life, including energy solutions, education, and even healthcare.